Blog Talk Radio.
By my nephew, Miles DeBastian. Thank you for joining us tonight. As most of you know, I'm a woman on a mission, and that mission is to have you and everyone else have the best love life possible in this new millennium. But before this can happen, you're going to have to learn a few new tricks. Joining me tonight are my two co-hosts, Kim and Nicole. Nicole is a beautiful young woman, a writer, a lesbian, an entrepreneur, not necessarily in that order. And she's here to share her love stories and war stories with us. She's the voice that will make all of us women stop blaming everything on the opposite sex, since Nicole knows women are making some of the same mistakes in their relationships with each other. Kim's a beautiful mother as well. She's a beautiful woman as well. She's a divorced mother, too. She will share her secrets that she's heard men utter about love and relationships, and she's learned these from being married many times and from a very interesting job she once had. She has made a recent job change, and we're very excited to hear about that, and she keeps informing us that it's going very well. We do have a call-in number, and that call-in number is 646-929-0958. Tonight we're going to be discussing the ladder of love. The ladder of love is something that was given to me through a channeling experience, and it basically classifies relationships into three distinct categories of personal relationships. And then there is the love of humanity at the higher ladder of love, and also there is our love of God. But the lower ends are cellmate or toxic love. You know, I've been getting a lot of emails from our listeners wondering, what is this ladder of love? You know, not everyone's read the book. Of course, if you read the book, Grant Me a Higher Love, the whole book, the whole premise of the book is founded on the ladder of love. But a lot of people haven't read the book. They're not familiar with it. And so tonight's show is going to be a little different than what we usually do, because we're going to get a little more technical here, a little bit more talking about what actually this ladder of love is. Cellmate love is very toxic love. It's angry love. It's two people who rage behind closed doors and then appear to be normal to the outside world. Nice people get involved in a toxic relationship because they think they're going to rescue somebody. They're going to fix this guy or this girl, and what happens is we don't rescue that person. We go down with them like the Titanic, sinking pretty fast. There are different kinds of cellmate relationships, and we'll go into details about those first three rungs on the ladder of love in a minute. But to summarize the ladder of love, we will move up to razor's edge mates or sitcom marriages. Those are the old archetypes of marriage in which people take each other for granted. They barely like each other. It's a love-hate relationship. Nobody grows, nobody evolves, nobody changes. And most marriages right now at this stage of human development are razor's edge mates. So we go from cellmates to razor's edge mates. At the top end of the personal relationships are soulmate love. There are many different kinds of soulmates, and we'll try to touch on as many kinds as we can today. And the soulmates do include mirror souls and twin souls relationships, which I think we're going to have to do a show on twin souls because we're getting a lot of emails on that as well. But soulmate love is healthy and healing, and it brings out the very best in us. It's the kind of love and care in which we love and commit to someone with our entire heart, soul, mind, and body. So what we're going to be doing is starting with the first rung of love, which is really toxic love and, you know, hardcore love. And I don't know whether Kim or Nicole wants to be the one reading about some of this, but this is a pretty heavy-duty love. This is the kind of relationship that we see on the front covers of newspapers. It's order of protection love. It's, you know, someone stalking someone, killing someone. It's pretty ugly love. And not so many relationships ever go down this bad, but they do go to the next rung. So we're going to start with cellmates, first rung love, first degree brutal love, headline making love, order protection love. Kim, would you like to read the first few paragraphs on this one?
Sure. Let me state by saying I've only been married twice, not many times. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. Okay, that might be many for some, but anyway, hardcore love. The players in this tragically destructive relationships often wind up in the emergency room, courtroom, jail, or morgue. Violence, drugs, alcohol, or mental illness often play a big role in these over-the-top, drama-driven relationships. They are excessively dependency issues, pathological jealousy issues, and fights that rival Chicago St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Okay, let's stop there for a minute. So the players in these tragically destructive relationships often wind up in the emergency room, courtroom, jail, or morgue. That's a pretty ugly description, but they tend to be very, very violent relationships. The violence, the drugs, the alcohol, and mental illness play a big role in these. Now, any relationship can move up or down the ladder of love, and that's pretty much what this show is about, moving on up. We hope to move up the ladder of love. But cellmate relationships of this magnitude is very rare that these people are going to be able to move that love up the ladder of love. It's not that it can't happen, but because there's such excessive drug use or mental illness and pathological jealousy issues, it's often almost impossible for this kind of relationship to ever evolve very much. I mean, I've personally never been involved in a relationship that's really first degree pathological type of relationship, and I don't think either one of you two have been in one that's this bad. I don't know.
My first husband, it was pretty much that entire scenario.
And now what we said before is that anger issues play into this. If we have our own anger issues, we're sometimes drawn to another person whose vibration is very angry. So we can get involved in this if we've had hard childhoods, abusive childhood, we've been neglected and abused. We often are young and we come with these sort of anger issues that we haven't resolved. And so we're drawn to this kind of person who also vibrates very angrily. The problem is that when you have two angry people, it gets really messy. Did you find that you were angry in the relationship as well?
I became angry in the relationship, absolutely. I'll take my part in that, and that's why it was a very short-lived relationship. It was pretty much over after 2 weeks after we were married.
And what...
That was youthful indiscretion.
Did you think you were going to rescue him? Did he have a sob story? I mean, was he like had 1,001 reasons why he, you know, his life was all screwed up and, you know, you were going to fix it?
I really wasn't thinking with my head, tell you the truth, but that's another story.
Okay,
it was one of those Las Vegas things. I didn't know him very long, and we just kind of had, you know, amazing sex, and that's really all that existed in a relationship. I don't even think we had a conversation before we got married, so.
But if you go to page 131, it says, many of these hardcore cellmates tend to be steeped in sexuality of the lowest chakra level. I mean, there is a lot of sexuality in these cellmates often. I mean, sometimes it's perversion and fetishes and, you know, kinky sex, but a lot of times it's just there is that sort of sexual, you know, energy between the two people, and that draws them into the relationship.
We were very different people when we came to know each other after the first couple weeks or first couple months, and he was very perverse in his sexual ideals, which I was not in judgment with, but I wasn't really in sync with that either.
And you did, that's what you can see why I said it includes sexual perversion, fetishes, excessive need for pornography, or kinky sex. I mean, that's one of the sort of the key off to this. There is something sort of, you know, over the top even in the sex part of it. So those things tend to be characteristics. You know, the ladder of love was channeled to me not, you know, the way that the Abraham Hicks law of attraction where they just, you know, get Abraham and he just, like, gives them word for word what to write down. Mine was channeled in a different sort of way. The universe would sort of bring me these toxic people, like, all at once for, like, 3 months, you know, and I'd be like, man, this is really weird. And I would be able to see certain characteristics of the relationship. And when I was sort of doing the book, I don't know, whatever angels or guides were coming through, they were sort of tweaking a little bit for me. So it did come about from doing a lot of tarot card readings, thousands and thousands of readings, and then sort of seeing these patterns. But they are very, very much patterns that do follow a certain, you know, very behavior that they all have. I mean, it's not unique, it's not different. So that's why, you know, in reading the book and understanding the Ladder of Love, I'm hoping that people will have a friend who's in a toxic relationship and say, hey, look, is he doing this? Is he kinky? Is he this? Is there, you know, violence? Is there drugs? Is there alcohol? Is there mental illness? Is he trying to control you? You'll have a way, and she'll be going like, what? How do you know all that? Like, you know him? No, I know the pattern of it. And so once a person realizes you're sort of knowing this person without knowing them, it's very enlightening to that person, and they really begin to realize they're in a toxic relationship. Now, one of the characteristics is also this master-slave archetype in these relationships, and we've discussed this in other radio shows, but a master-slave is where, you know, one person's the boss and the other person's the slave. Sometimes, you know, traditionally it's been the men who have been the bosses over women, and women have had to, like, tolerate a lot of stuff. But now women are kind of bossing men around, and it's often, you know, mommy to a boy, and that's also an archetype there. But in these kinds, it's not just like mommy to a boy or daddy to a girl. It's really master to the slave. I mean, this is a master-slave archetype where the man thinks he owns the woman, or the woman thinks she really owns the man. Like, you're really their property. And because of that, they begin to isolate you and take you from your friends. If Kim, if you had stayed long enough, you would have seen more of these patterns.
Oh, I did. The marriage lasted actually 3 years.
Did he try to isolate you from friends and family?
From everybody.
Okay, because that's another characteristic. They sort of kidnap you and they take you from friends and family because there's such pathological jealousy issues that they don't want you near any person, not a family member who may be able to point out that you're in a toxic relationship. And so if, you know, a person really wants to isolate you from everyone they've ever known and not want you near them or not want to bring you near, it's really a characteristic that that relationship, that person really, really thinks they own you. And they often move you far away, even if they can.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to isolate you. They'll take you to the other side of the world. So, you know, those are some of the things that you can really see. But what really keeps these cellmates together is a fear of abandonment. And that may sound crazy because you think about it, if a man's beating the hell out of you, why aren't you running? That would be the normal response. Or if a woman's really abusive to you, why wouldn't you leave? But there is that unconscious contract. And this is one of the most brilliant things that was ever channeled to me, because I don't think I would have seen this for myself. But it was that there's an unconscious contract, a karmic contract that says no matter what you do or I do, we never leave each other. And it's unconscious. It's not something we go in consciously thinking. So it's only when a person begins to heal. Kim, did you start to, like, somehow begin to heal a little bit, and then you sort of didn't want to?
Oh, yeah, about a year after into the relationship. I wanted a divorce, actually, 2 weeks after. I wanted to get an annulment, and he's like, we'll work it out, you know. Comes from Catholic, you know, we got married, and we got to do it. We have to stay married because I'm not divorcing you. And about a year later, I got my stuff together, and I got my life together, and I was like, I'm done.
And see, you got your stuff together. What usually is that, you know, there's a bad self-esteem issue oftentimes involved here, too. So, you know, if a woman doesn't have a good self-esteem or a man doesn't have a good self-esteem, sometimes they don't think anyone else ever wants them. And the abusive mate usually tries to drag down that self-esteem even worse. And, you know, tell you you're not pretty, you're ugly, you're stupid, whatever, nobody will ever want you. And so this sort of battering of a self-esteem that takes place. And even when you're trying to get away from this type of relationship, it's often that you're so afraid that the person's going to harm you or harm anyone who's helping you get out of the relationship, and that makes it even harder to leave. So there can be the threats of violence happening to you. And I don't know if you remember Hedda Nussbaum and Joel Steinberg, those really educated, successful people. Hedda Nussbaum had been an editor of a book. As a matter of fact, I had it in my house. It was Charlie Brown's encyclopedia. I couldn't believe it because I got that for Shauna, and it was strange that I actually owned a book that she had been the editor of. and Joel Steinberg had been a lawyer, and they were like really, you know, he was beating Hedda, and he was really violent, and their poor adopted daughter Lisa became the ultimate victim of their destructive love. And even though the organizations, you know, this protective services were called in, nobody thought that these two educated people would really be guilty of this kind of horrible behavior. But I use them as an example of my book because it doesn't matter whether you're rich, you're famous, you're successful. You see it with entertainers, you see it with, you know, rock stars, and you see it doesn't matter who they are, they can be involved in this really type of toxic relationship. And remember, with the ladder of love, any relationship can descend down. Most often, they don't go quite that low, but they do go to second-rung love, which is the soft-core love. Now, Nicole, would you just read at page 136 a little bit about soft-core love, the first
part? Oh, absolutely.
Because this is a pretty
common... Second-degree brutal love, soft-core love. As with the first rung of love, there are excessive dependency and pathological jealousy issues going on. Oftentimes, these relationships are still violent, but not quite as life-threatening as those on the first rung. There are still plenty of threats of violence, curse words, and plates flying. When push comes to shove, these relationships can rapidly deteriorate into the kind of violent outbursts we associate with first-degree love, particularly if there are drugs and/or alcohol involved. There are still lower chakra sexuality and boundary issues involved, but to a lesser degree than in the first rung.
Okay, so you can see that it's similar, but it's not quite as bad. I think we do have a caller, a 313 number.
Yes, we do.
Hi,
you're
Dora.
On the air?
Hey, Dora.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. I've never been in a relationship. I'm 22 years old. I never had a girlfriend before. I never experienced nothing in a relationship. So I wanted to know when I'll be in a relationship.
When you will be in one?
Yes.
Have you decided that you want to be in one?
Yes.
Because if you want a relationship, now if you notice we're talking about the kind of relationships you don't want to be in, which is toxic love, I'm going to ask you a question, and I usually ask this of all of my clients, what kind of marriage did your parents have? Or relationship did your parents have?
Well, they ain't have no good relationship. Like, my mom and dad ain't have no good relationship.
Okay, so that's right there the key to why you might be a little more reluctant to get involved in a relationship, because you don't have a good role model to be following. I'm sure you don't want to be doing what your parents did.
No, I'm different.
You want to do something different. And, you know, we here advocate soulmate love, and Nicole, you want to take that and tell them what soulmate love is? Because I think you're pretty good describing that.
Well, soulmate love is the kind of love that just brings out the absolute best in you. It is a lot different from the kinds of loves that we're talking about right now. It is the bottom line of soulmate love is just the fact that the two people that are involved in soulmate love are absolutely, positively, unconditional with one another and love each other with their heart, mind, body, and soul. And ultimately, that is the kind of love that every one of us strives to have.
And
okay.
I think it's very, you know, you must have a lot of divine guidance to be drawn to the show because,
okay.
You know, you have a grandmother who passed away?
No.
There's a woman who seems to have known you when you were growing up that was very close to you. And basically, that person wants to make sure that you get a love that's really something
healing.
Well,
I had a great-grandmother that
passed. A great-grandmother. You knew her, right, when you were growing up?
Yes.
Because she's the voice speaking, and she's the one saying to you that she wants you to understand that there are all different kinds of love and that you were wise to stay away from any kind of toxic relationship, any kind of thing that would be ugly and violent and not good. But
okay.
The kind of love that she has in mind for you is a soulmate love. And you asked when you're going to have a relationship. And people who have passed on, like a grandmother or a great-grandmother who have loved
okay.
us, they're allowed to gift us with someone to love. And she knows who this soulmate would be for you.
Okay.
But she's saying you have to recognize that it's a different kind of animal than you've seen around you. Otherwise, you're going to get afraid and run away from it.
Okay.
His soulmate love asks that we heal some of our issues. And, you know, you have some abandonment issues that everybody has, and that when this great love comes, you might, you know, your instinct might be to say, oh, God, all this stuff is coming up inside of me and I'm scared.
Okay.
But that's when you're going to need to stay put.
Okay.
But it is, so in order to, you know, recognize this soulmate when she comes, I would advise you to do a little love work assignment that I always advocate. And tonight you're going to write down what your ideal soulmate would be like. And you're going to say she's going to be your friend. She's going to be your lover. She's going to be someone you can communicate with. She's going to be someone who's loyal and trustworthy.
Okay.
Someone who'll be there through the good and bad times. You have some idea of what kind of a person you would like in your life?
They rejected me, and it was always, when I was little, it was always a certain person I always wanted, but they rejected me and moved on.
Okay, so you're going to pray for a soulmate who's ready and willing, able to love and commit to you.
Okay.
And it's really, you know, you really are, this is going to really happen, and I bet 6 months from now you'll be calling us, telling us that you have this wonderful love. And, you know, if you would, you know, listen to the rest of the show as we're discussing the different kinds of love, you're going to see that you were wise to avoid toxic love or mediocre love, which is sort of what you see on television shows like Everybody Loves Raymond, where the people take each other for granted. I mean, and it gets boring and mediocre. Who the hell wants that? We see that everywhere. And that's probably some of the relationships you've seen that appear to be at least better than what you've seen growing up. And we always do have to relive our parents' relationship because we've judged them. Have you forgiven your parents at this point in your life?
Something like that.
Because if you stop judging them, it's a good thing because you won't have to become them. And that will free you to really accept this wonderful love that will be your gift, that is your gift. And your great-grandma's saying all she ever wanted was a happy family.
Yeah.
And this will be your chance to, you know, you're young, you're only 22, to start your own family and have your own children and start new traditions and be the kind of father that you wish you had and have your children have the kind of mother that you might have wished to have. And you, and your job here is to end family dysfunction and not duplicate what they've done.
Okay.
So, you know, we're going to start moving up to the next rung of love, and, you know, you're free, certainly free to listen, and if you have a question, you can certainly talk to us again.
Okay, when do you see me in a relationship?
Excuse me?
I said, when do you see me in a relationship?
I see it coming very soon. It's very soon. It's probably within the next few months. So, you know, just keep writing down what your ideal soulmate is and pray for that soulmate and ask God to grant you it.
Okay, you say within 6 months.
Yes, definitely. And I'll expect to hear a call from you. And what was your first name?
Rodney.
Rodney. We expect to hear from Rodney in 6 months.
Okay.
And Rodney's soulmate, too.
Okay. I got one more question. One more extra question. I had five psychics that told me I'm going to have a girlfriend within 6 months. Five psychics that said the same thing. They stay around. A lot of them stay around December.
And that's of this year?
Yes.
And I see it coming. So I think you need to, you know, I think you need to, like, stop spending your money on psychics now and and save it to take your girlfriend out on a really great date. So, you know, I think you really are. I do believe it's definitely by December. And your great-grandma is, like, you know, laughing up there because she's saying, you know, save your money. But, you know, good luck to you. And, you know, thank you for joining our show. And we're going to move up the ladder of love.
Thank you, Rodney.
Okay, thank you.
Now, we're going to go up to third rung love, which is interchangeable love. We haven't talked about this one much in the show. I realize that. I don't know why I don't talk about this one much, because it's pretty common. So I think if, you know, Kim and Nicole alternate paragraphs for like, the first one, two, three, four paragraphs, because this is the important rung of love, and I don't know why I haven't been bringing it up more.
Okay, interchangeable love. Countless numbers of people settle for third-degree love and what I call the Donald Trump syndrome, where one physically attractive or outwardly successful person is interchangeable with the other. Third-degree love is a very superficial level of love based on external elements such as looks, money, and status. Third-degree love is all about ego, power, and trying to impress the world with a trophy mate.
In third-degree love relationships, The cellmates have no intention of healing any of their personal issues, mainly because they're too egotistical to realize that they have any. Unconsciously, they decide to project all the relationship problems onto the other cellmate. When the going gets rough, the cellmates often bail out of the relationship and then go after each other's jugular. On its way out, third rung love can disintegrate quite rapidly into second rung or even first rung love, where these couples are still guilty of practicing the five deadly sins committed in the name of conditional love: narcissism, selfishness, greed, envy, and jealousy.
Okay, so you got a pretty good idea of what's going on with that. Move down just where this love can be highly sexually charged, that one.
This love can be highly sexually charged at first, mm-hmm. but before long these cellmates get bored with each other. In the beginning, there can be an illusion of loving each other conditionally with the heart, mind, body, and soul, but reality soon sets in and both cellmates become well aware that it's about ego. Think Donald Trump and blah, 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 or many celebrities and blah, blah, blah.
Now you can see that this is a pretty common form of love, don't you think?
Yes.
Particularly when we're younger. You know, young people always want to know what he looks like, what she looks like, how much money he makes, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, if you stay your whole life with this, you're just going to keep replacing one person with another. And it is interchangeable. It really isn't much difference, because if you're only attracted to the outer elements of a person, you know, there are certain types of people. You know, certain type of people like to wear a certain type of clothes or drive a certain kind of car or do, you know, certain things, that it would almost be interchangeable. And that's the kind of love that, you know, when you see it, it's pretty obvious. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been involved in a relationship where, you know, the kind of person you just feel you could exchange with another, but that's never been my thing. I've never been a third-run love. It's usually a very narcissistic person because it's all about the superficial things. But, you know, we can name a million celebrity couples that seem to be just changing one partner for the next at that level. And it is very common. You know, it is a really common thing. And those first three rungs represent cellmate or toxic love, because, you know, that's a pretty toxic thing if, you know, you just keep being exchanged for another person, or you just keep, you know, finding another person after another just to fulfill whatever narcissistic needs you have. Now, toxic love is something that is angry, and just keep that in mind. But we're going to move up now to razor's edge mates, or fourth rung love, and these are the old archetypes of marriage, the old kinds of marriage we've seen around us. The old ball and chain things, for better, but it's usually for worse. Nicole and Kim, you want to alternate some of this? Because it's best if you read it from the book, because I think I've said it pretty clearly in here.
Okay. For better or for worse, but it's usually for worse. As you move up the ladder of love to rung four, these razor's edge mates will meet more of each other's basic needs, such as the need for companionship, economic survival, and the primal impulse to perpetuate the human race. A high percentage of fourth rung couples marry. Once the honeymoon is over, however, fourth rung married couples tend to take each other for granted, treat each other without respect, and in general, they act much nicer to everyone else in the world than they act with each other. Before long, these marriages become the old ball and chain thing.
These couples don't have to deal with healing their relationship issues because they operate under the false belief that this is the way it is. It's a male thing, or you know how women are. They buy into a lot of cliche expressions about the war of the sexes and go into a state of deep denial about having any real issues of their own. These razor's edge mates have a middle school mindset and take a like-it-or-lump-it attitude with each other. Fourth-rung couples can remain functional alcoholics, control freaks, etc. Basically, the holes in one razor's edge mate's head fit in points in each other's.
Okay, so you can see this is a pretty sort of mediocre love. These are the sitcom marriages. I always use the sitcom Everybody Loves Raymond because the fourth rung would be Marie and Frank Barone. They're pretty much, you know, the perfect example of this. And also when we watched I Love Lucy, do you remember Fred and Ethel Mertz? And I Love Lucy.
I love that show.
I know. And they were really, like, you know, always making fun of each other. They barely liked each other. The another characteristic of this type is that there may be little physical contact in or out of the bed, or they may have a decent sex life, but there isn't a lot of affection expressed outside of the bedroom. For cheap thrills, they might turn to pornography to add some needed spice to their otherwise ho-hum sex life. If one partner has a life-awakening experience, a near-death experience, a full-blown midlife crisis, or life-threatening illness, the status quo will be broken and all hell will break loose. The other partner will anxiously wait for the day when things get back to normal. Now, this is a really tribally accepted relationship, and to the outside world, it appears to be a match made in heaven. You know, Kim, I think your mom and your stepfather's relationship has moved up the ladder to this, I think, at this point. They're just sort of on the outside. It looks pretty good.
I don't know about that. I know her parents.
Is it more toxic than this?
Yeah. But, okay. you know, they live in the same house and, you know, exist together basically as roommates when they're not fighting.
And when
they're
you
like
think,
the odd couple.
But when it first started, you remember when your mom first married him? Was it sort of a fourth-rung marriage? I mean, did she go in? I don't think she went in thinking it's going to be toxic. I think she went in thinking this was a decent relationship at this point.
Well, you know, she went in thinking, well, he has a good job, and he seems stable. He comes from a good family, and there was no love involved. It was back then. It was the 70s, and you pretty much, she needed someone to take care of her.
Again, it was a business arrangement.
Right.
We talk about that. You know, traditionally, marriages were arranged. I always mention how my grandparents had an arranged marriage two generations back. And it was, you know, can he support her? It's, you know, can she take care of him and the kids? So
yeah, there was no, you know, passion or love or attraction or anything. It was just, they were, you know, friends.
And that's why we call it the old role model of marriage. This is not what we want now. God has liberated women. They're working. They're, you know, paying their way in the world. And so, you know, we hope to not have this kind, except if it's not pointed out that this is something that we see and it appears normal, it's everywhere, but it doesn't make it right, you know. And I think people, as they're beginning to be exposed to this sort of ladder of love and the classifications, they're starting to realize, you know, I had one woman email me who read the book, and she was supposed to walk down the aisle a week later. And she realized she was starting at a fourth rung. And she thought, oh, no, I'm not going there. And, you know, she thanked me very much. She said, you know, it's costing her a fortune not to get married. And yet she realized it would cost her much more in the long run. And I thought that took a lot of courage on her part.
It certainly does.
And she said she never heard anybody. And she had actually listened to her radio show. That's how she, like, found out about the book. And, you know, she was talking about how Kim was bringing up with his soulmate love in one show and how it was the heart, soul, mind, body thing. And we had talked about how you should never say I do if you can't say I love you with my entire heart, soul, mind, and body. And she said she couldn't say it, I do, to any of those.
Wow.
And, you know,
wow.
She said it was so tribally accepted. She, and, you know, you'll relate to this, Kim. She met him when she was like 16, and now she's like 23. And, you know, she was kind of shy, and, you know, he was her first boyfriend, and, you know, he lived in the neighborhood, and everybody knew everybody's family. And everybody just assumed they would get married.
It was the next step.
Yeah. And so, you know, she just, you know, wrote a great big thank you, and she said although everybody's mad at her, everybody can't stand her, she now knows that they love her conditionally.
And we'll tell her that in 1 year from now it won't really matter.
Well, she said, she goes, you know, I'm thinking, you know, they'll get over it. And she said she just told everybody, we can't cancel the catering hall, but you can all go have a party there.
Sure.
So they're all going
to
have a party.
You know what? Don't even laugh. That happened to a friend of mine, where at the last possible minute he decided he could not marry you know, his fiance, that there were just, he found out a whole bunch of stuff, you know, really, really late in the game. And it was too late to cancel everything. So he still had everybody come out. He said, well, there's going to be no wedding, but it's top shelf all the way. And he had a massive party to celebrate not getting married.
And that's exactly how she feels. And she said, and the little PS was, and you know what? For the first time in 2 years, I'm sleeping through the night. And I
good
thought,
for her.
Isn't that wonderful? And you know that she, you know, and I emailed her back saying, you know, God will grant you a higher love because you've already seen that you didn't want to settle for what your mom has or your grandmother has or, you know, anybody else has. You know, you want that love affair, that great soulmate love. And so, you know, we're going to, you know, I say a little prayer for her and, you know, just wish her that love that she really does deserve. So now we're going to move up to fifth rung love. It's still the old archetype of marriage, but it's more the everyday garden variety love. It's not quite as bad as the fourth rung. This is like the Deborah and Raymond, and Everybody Loves Raymond, or I Love Lucy, Ricky and Lucy. And if you remember, Ricky was always telling Lucy what she should do and couldn't do. We loved that show because he was the master over her being the slave, but she was a rebellious slave, and she did what she wanted. So that was really what we got the kick out of.
Well, that's kind of like a gray area, too, because in some senses he was the master, she was the slave, and then they did a kind of a role reversal because even though Lucy was not supposed to get what she wants, in some way, shape, or form, she still got it, and he still dealt with it.
Right, and the thing that was really old archetype marriage about that show is that she wasn't supposed to want to be the one making a living or having a career or being the entertainer or being, you know, and that, you know, a lot of the old sitcoms like Bewitched and were telling the women they couldn't use their power, you know, that the husbands were mad if Bewitched used her powers. And
mm-hmm.
those shows are still airing and they disturb me because, you know, it's not very good for our daughters to see that you shouldn't seek something for your own or use your own power. And, you know, those are the old archetypes of marriage. In the new archetype of marriage, people will look two equals. No one's going to be telling anybody what they should or shouldn't do in terms of their career or where they're going. Now, if you guys want to alternate some paragraphs here on the everyday garden variety love.
Okay. When you think of many of the marriages you've seen over your lifetime, you'll probably be thinking of the fifth rung of love. This rung of love is very similar to the fourth rung in that there are no great obstacles to overcome in order for this couple to be together. It is very socially acceptable arrangements, but unlike fourth rung love, these razor's edge mates would never consciously plan on leaving each other. They meant it when they vowed death do us part, and for the most part, there are enough positive reinforcements to keep the relationship going. This can include a nice home, stability, a comfortable lifestyle, and the respect of friends in the larger community. Yet there are many unhealed issues swept under the carpet and whole areas of discontentment. These couples deal with their differences by thinking, well, I made my bed, so now I have to sleep in it. Over the years, they have fewer and fewer interests in common, and their children and grandchildren become the cement that really keeps them together.
Fifth rung couples often have a series of unresolved petty arguments going on, but no one pays much attention to these anymore. It's just the way it is. These couples are quite adept at playing the victim, rescue, or persecutor game. If they have children, the children may be regulated the job of rescuer,
mm-hmm.
a rescuer in an effort to end the parental bickering quickly.
Okay, so you can see that sounds like a lot of what we've seen around us. You know, the parents are always bickering and, you know, after a while nobody listens because you just know they're never going to resolve anything. And, you know, I know before my mother got so ill and now, of course, they can't fight like this, but I used to dread going over there. You know, I'd be over there and they'd be like bickering about some stupid thing they've been arguing over for 100 years and, you know, where is this, where is that, who put this where, you know, whatever. And it's just one of those things where you all sort of feel uncomfortable and squirm around, but is a very, very socially acceptable kind of marriage. And it is the kind of thing that people really, really do think this is the way marriage is. And the problem with rung four and rung five love is that these borderline relationships have some characteristics of soulmates, and yet they also possess some characteristics of soulmate relationships. For example, there's some nurturing and support. For this reason, rung four and rung five relationships tend to be the kinds of long-term relationships that are the hardest to actually leave because they do have the potential to ascend the ladder of love if both races' edgemates would be willing to work together. It's this hope for some kind of positive change that keeps races' edgemates hanging in there. So, you know, it's much easier to, after a while, leave the first three rungs that are really toxic because if they're bad enough, you know, after a while, you just have to get the hell out of there. I mean, they're just bad. But these sort of borderline relationships, sometimes there's just there's enough good that you're not sure. It's the kind of like everyday thing, should I stay or should I go? And, you know, I think my marriage for the most part was probably this sort of rung five. And, you know, it wasn't really toxic. It wasn't good. It wasn't bad. And it made it really difficult for me to leave. And, you know, what I tell people is if your relationship is not serving your higher good or your mate's higher good, then that's a reason enough to leave. And if you keep thinking for a long term, you know, every year for 10 years, should I stay or should I go? That's not good. A good relationship, we know we belong there. Now, some of my favorite rungs on the ladder of love, of course, go into the soulmate love, and that's cherishing the greatest gift from God, soulmates. And our romantic soulmates are rungs 6 through 9, and these are heaven sent. And so if we move into the book, we have 6-rung love on page 175, and this is the new archetype or new role model of marriage that I call holy matrimony till death do us part. And, Kim, you want to take the first paragraph or few paragraphs there?
Sure. 6-rung love represents the new archetype of marriage in which soulmates unconditionally love each other and commit to each other with their entire hearts, souls, mind, and bodies. These couples consciously try to eradicate the master-slave archetype and view each other as equals. 6-rung love is similar to 5th-rung love in so as far as there are no major obstacles for the couple to overcome in order to be together. Although they may face all kinds of traumas over the course of their lifetime together, initially there are no age, race, religious, or social class issues to overcome. Or they may come from extended families that are already racially or religiously blended, and these differences are seen as inconsequential.
What differentiates this rung of love from the previous one is the simple fact that these couples truly know they belong together, and if they could go back and live their lives over, the one thing they wouldn't change is their marriage. One or both of the soulmates in the 6th-rung relationship are easygoing and have a kind of live-and-let-live attitude. As a rule, these soulmates are not overly jealous or possessive. They tend to live in gratitude for what they have. Money, not having it or not, has a little impact on this relationship because the real wealth of their lives is measured in the love they have for each other.
Kim, you want to read the infidelity part? Yeah,
sure.
That's an important part in this.
You got it. Infidelity is rarely a problem for these couples, for most of their primary needs are met within the relationship. Because these couples are totally committed to each other, they meant it when they vowed, till death do us part. One or both partners could, however, have issues that remain unhealed throughout their lifetime together. This inability to heal certain issues keeps these couples from ascending the ladder of love to the next level, the 7th rung. At times, okay?
Yeah. Now, basically,
okay.
You can see this sounds like a nice couple, no?
Yeah.
And, you know, the couples can have a great sex life together, but they might not be aware of the concept of sacred sexuality. And that's an important thing there. Another important concept is these soulmates seem to be adept at handling sticky situations with grace and a sense of humor. And these are the powerful weapons they use to keep any dysfunctional elements in check. Grace and a sense of humor. So these are the kind of people that, you know, if you're with a couple and they're really happy and something's going wrong, they manage to laugh about it. It's not a big deal as opposed to, you know, my parents, which would be like screaming and yelling and, you know, everything is, you know, now a total disaster. And it's that sort of easygoing quality that they have that makes them such a pleasure to be around. When we were children, I'm sure you probably had a couple, or I hope you knew a family that they had a couple like this, and you just wanted to be at their house. You just knew they were happy, you know, and that everything wasn't going to be a fight. Did you have a couple you liked to go to when you were growing up?
I can't recall.
I know. It's pretty
I'm
rare.
I'm really thinking about this now. I don't think so.
I know. That's why sometimes we used to watch the old sitcoms like Leave It to Beaver and, you know, Donna Reed Show, because they actually were nice families. They were
That's
actually nice to each other.
To me growing up.
They were actually respectful of each other. And, you know, I use the example of George and Mary Bailey in the beginning of the movie, It's a Wonderful Life. Although they're both people of integrity and high moral standards from the start, it's only after George's life altering experience with his guardian angel that God becomes an integral part of the relationship. By the end of the movie, George and Mary have become 7th-rung soulmates. When God takes center stage in an already healed relationship, couples ascend the ladder of love to become 7th heaven love. Now, if you can see, there's nothing wrong with a six-rung love. They're just not as aware. They're just not, perhaps, you know, they may not speak of God. They may be atheists. It doesn't matter. That's okay. They're just good moral people who have a good relationship and are easygoing. But in order to be seventh rung love, the healing, holy, happy love, you would have to have God in the equation. So, Kim, you want to start reading about seventh heaven love?
Sure. The soulmates involved in seventh rung love are very blessed indeed. They not only have an intimate relationship with each other, but they have an intimate relationship as God as well, with God as well. These couples are unconditionally love each other, and they truly respect and appreciate each other as well. They're totally committed to each other with their entire hearts, minds, souls, and bodies. This blessed couple enjoys great passion, but without all the drama, because they're both remarkably healed human beings. And can I just stress the point of God as a higher power as well?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely. And that's important. And, you know, because some people, I mean, I'm a person who did not use the word God for 20 years. So, I mean, it wasn't a word that I'm all that comfortable with myself. So I don't care if you're going to say God, a higher power,
the universe,
whatever word you're comfortable with, you know, is fine. Because, when I was writing the book, I'll tell you the truth, it was the first time I had really used the word God, like in a public manner or even, but I felt it was as good enough. And if you notice through the book, sometimes they use universe, sometimes they use God. I alternate much of it, but you're right. You know, whatever, there is that sort of higher consciousness that there's something, you know, more than just the two of them that got them together.
Maybe a spirituality.
The spirituality.
Or the higher power or the universe or.
Absolutely.
Something positive.
Nicole, you want to pick up from where she finished?
Sure. From the onset, there may or may not be external obstacles for this couple to overcome in order to be together. There could be a big age difference, or they could be of different races, but no matter how daunting the obstacles may be, they somehow manage to overcome them. In fact, the chief characteristic of seventh rung love is the ability of both soulmates to deeply understand that only love matters. Therefore, they both do everything possible to ensure that their love flourishes. These soulmates see eye to eye on most important issues. They agree to disagree on others with no ill effects. They have a great many interests in common, and this makes them not only lovers, but best friends as well. Seventh rung soulmate relationships can withstand the winds of change. These couples seem to be able to face every situation in life, no matter how harsh, with grace and courage. For this reason, people tend to look up to them for inspiration. Infidelity rarely plays a part in these relationships simply because their most important needs are met within the relationship. These soulmates experience a great deal of affection in and outside of the bedroom. They have come to understand that sex is a sacred act. They've learned to mesh in oneness with each other, and their lovemaking is a form of prayer and meditation as they live in the now, fully experiencing the wonder of the moment.
Okay, Kim, you want to read the next two paragraphs because they're important paragraphs as well?
Over time, they learn to blend their essence in intercourse of the mind, the heart, the soul, and the body as well. Blending is the free flow of energy between people. Blending of energies occurs between people on many levels. We can blend out energies on a creative, spiritual, emotional, psychological, or sexual level, or any combination of the above. You'll know that blending has occurred because after you've exchanged energies with another soul, your spirit will feel renewed and recharged. It is as if your soul and the souls or souls you have blended with have all been realigned. Seven rung soulmates tend to have passionate relationships not only with each other, but with the rest of the world. They're active and passionate participators in life. Often, sometimes these couples join forces to fight for a cause they believe in, and this benefits not only their local community, but the larger world as well.
Okay, so these are really a nice couple, and of course, George and Mary Bailey, at the end of It's a Wonderful Life, when George finally really commits to that relationship and he finally embraces that there is a higher power, that their relationship really becomes this seventh heaven love. And I think this is something that people can strive to have. And if you've got a razor's edge marriage, that a fifth rung marriage, there's no reason you can't bring it up to a sixth rung or a seventh rung. It just means learning to, you know, say what you mean what you say, but don't be mean about it. It means no more excuses when you're being abusive. You know, heal your issues. love each other.
Have an open mind.
Have an open mind, allow for some growth and room within it. And, you know, I've been very blessed lately to be counseling a lot of couples. For some reason, they're coming to me in droves now because I've been helping them. And what they're striving for is to bring their marriage up. Some of them were going to end their marriage, and they really had a fifth rung. It wasn't horrible, but they were getting to the point where, either they were going to terminate it or they were going to fix it. But they didn't know how to fix it, and somehow they were guided here. And they are really amazingly scheduling an affair with each other. They're now making love much more regularly. They're going out on a date with each other. They're talking with each other, and they're igniting the flame. So it can happen. It's just that I don't think the four couples I've been working with very recently, I don't think they understood that they could have a different kind of marriage than they saw around them, because they never saw this. So it's just making people aware that you can bring your love up the ladder of love. Now, we're going to go into step 6, which is twin soul love, and read a little bit about that. And I think one day we'll have to do a whole thing on twin souls, because we're getting people asking us about twin soul love, which seems to be so misunderstood. And it took me a lot of channeling information to come up with what the twin soul was. So, let's go into the eighth rung love, which is the stormy sacred duet. And the reason I say the stormy sacred duet is twin souls are not the stuff of happily ever after right now at this stage of human development. Something to stress. When people wish for their twin soul, I'm like, be careful what you wish for. Because any other soulmate relationship does not ask that you heal all your issues. You can heal 80% of them and still have a soulmate love. You can heal 50% and still have a soulmate love. Twin souls are asked to do total karmic reckoning, is to heal all of their issues so that they actually become like an ascended master on Earth. That's an awful lot of healing. That's like 50 lifetimes in one lifetime. So you would only meet this twin soul when you're almost near having that total ascension of your soul. But anyway, we'll go to a little bit about the idea of twin souls as old as man. And every age and era seems to have its own legends, myths, and stories that bespeak this concept. I mean, when you watch a Romeo and Juliet, there was big obstacles to overcome in that, wasn't there in the story? Their families are at war with each other. Nobody wants them to be together. And they were brought for the higher good, not just for their own love affair, but it was hoped in bringing Romeo and Juliet together that their love would heal this war, this feud between the two families. So there's always about twin souls, something larger than just the twin souls. They do have some larger thing to do for humanity. Beethoven, who I spent 4 years writing a one-man play about Beethoven, and he had met his immortal beloved when he was only 28 years old. And most of his works that he created for her, in the absence of her. So even though they weren't together, because she just didn't seem to be able to heal her issues and understand that only love matters, she wanted him to have a title. She wanted a count, or she wanted some nobility. She wanted lots of money. She wanted the external things of life, and she could never embrace him. And he created all this great music for humanity as a result of not having her. So even though they weren't together, he was still expected to do what he was expected to do for humanity. So, twin souls are a big, big topic to discuss, and we don't have all that much time left. So I want to move up to mirror souls, because mirror souls are, like, great, because we have many opportunities to meet a mirror soul. And I believe that Nicole and Kim are mirror souls. Would you agree with that?
Yes. I think so.
Because you two have had many obstacles to face, but you seem to just love each other unconditionally.
Absolutely. There's nothing I wouldn't do for this woman.
And that the two of you have managed to bring out the best in each other. Just the fact that the two of you have been brought to grant me a higher love, and the two of you came to it together, shows me that you probably would have to be mirror souls. Because mirror souls are two people that love each other unconditionally. They bring out the best in each other. It can be a sexual relationship. It doesn't have to be. It can be a friendship. Mirror souls can be of the same sex. They can be of opposite sex. it's one of the best love relationships you can have if you can get through to that part where if it's meant to be a love affair, because you do love each other so unconditionally and you tend to bring out the best in each other. And do you think you two do that for each other? Because I think that you do. I mean, I think sometimes you maybe have brought out the worst, but that's only for a moment because you seem to always come back to something.
Well, that's a long-sorted story itself. But, you know, our friendship is definitely one of a mirror-soul. Definitely, we're very good friends.
And, again, it's a relationship in which the two of you have seen how you can go through ups and downs and still be there for each other. And mirror souls, when you have a mirror soul, it shows you how you should really be treating the whole world, not just each other, loving the whole world unconditionally. And it's just a wonderful healing relationship. And, of course, moving up the ladder of love in the last few minutes we have is agape and cosmic consciousness, having a love affair with the entire universe. I think the two of you have pretty much gotten yourself up there because you're trying to do this whole grant me a higher love, not just for yourself, but because you believe in that the world needs a higher love.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's showing that you have enough love for humanity and for the whole universe. And cosmic consciousness is just seeing that, you know, all of us are interrelated and having a great respect for all of God's creatures and for the earth and for the planets and for the whole universe. And it's just a tremendous, tremendous higher consciousness if you can get there. And, of course, the final highest rung is our personal, intimate relationship with God. And I think we're all working on that. Are you working on that, Kim and Nicole, your relationship with God?
I have a tremendous relationship with the universe, and my life is, even though, you know, there's ups and downs and bad days and good days, I really, you know, I'm really grateful for my life, and I thank the universe every day for it, so, and I have happiness, so.
And those of you who know me know that I don't believe that God is dead, as Nietzsche said. I do believe dogma is dead. And sometimes I know I turned away from God because I had the mistaken thought that God was dogma, God was the Catholic Church, or God was, and I found that to be, you know, something that I just couldn't wrap my brain around as I got older. And so, you know, if the listeners out there have sort of turned away from having this intimate relationship with a higher power because of your own, you know, religious upbringing that was very, you know, guilt-instilling and scary, and, you know, God was going to have us mashing our teeth and, you know, the fires and brimstone, it's time for you to have your own personal relationship with a higher power and, you know, move away from that fear-based God into a love-based God, because that is really what God is, or the universe is, or that higher power. It is love. And so love is that. And so that's why when we talk about grant me a higher love, everything is love. We are love. That energy that circles inside of your body is love. It can't be created or destroyed. It's why, you know, I'm called the romance whisperer, because I talk to that ball of energy that has left the earth, that is somebody's mother or lover or son or child, and that ball of energy is still spinning and it's still communing and it's still loving and it's still blending with you. And if you're separated from a soulmate that you love, that energy is still blending, it's still communing, and it's still there. And so, you know, what we've learned today is we've really scaled that ladder of love pretty rapidly. But, you know, I thank the two of you for joining me with this, because I know this was a little different from the shows that we usually do. But I think we did a good job of it. What do you think?
I think we did.
Because, you know, people have been asking, and so I'm looking forward to joining all of you next week. And, you know, Kim and Nicole, if there's any topic you'd like to discuss that's bugging you or that you can buy
the book Grant Me a Higher Love on Amazon.com.
You can also buy it now on Love Her Right, L-O-V-E, Her, H-E-R-R-I-G-H-T, Right.
And a shout out to Michael for taking me to lunch today. Thank you. And a shout out to Ariel, who is doing a tattoo removal tomorrow. I appreciate that as well.
I didn't know you had a tattoo.
Ariel from Dark Child Tattoos in Port Jefferson is doing a tattoo removal, so I do appreciate your time. And also, it's raining. Make love in the rain I love you all.
Okay. Nicole,
and I just have a quick shout-out to my own personal spirit guide. You know who you are. Thank you so much for stopping by, and thank you very much for all the inspiration.
Wow. And we'll speak next week, and have a great week, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Good night.